Welcome to Big Blue Kickoff Live right here on Giants.com. Joined by Paul Tatino. I am John Schmelk. 201-939-4513. Hashtag Giants chat on Twitter if you want to join us that way. Check it out. And of course, you can listen to the first 5 minutes on Twitter. Then you go to Giants.com or the Giants mobile app to listen and watch the remainder of the program. We'll continue on today's show with our trip around college football, Mr. Tatino. Yesterday, we had Beanie Wells talking Ohio State. Really was great. If you didn't watch the show, go back and watch it and listen to the archive. He had some great information on, you know, the Conleys, the Marshawn Lattimores, you know, all those guys. It was really interesting. And today, we'll stick with the same theme. We'll stay in the Big Ten, and we'll talk to Mark Tauscher, who is a former Packer and Wisconsin Badger offensive lineman. Now he covers both teams on the radio in Wisconsin. So he'll be a good guy to talk about the players coming out from the Badgers. And, of course, a big one is an offensive lineman. So who better to talk about Mr. Ryan,
by the way,
Ryan Ramczyk than Mr. Tauscher. So he'll be joining us at 12:15. So make sure you stay tuned for that. But, Paul, some rule changes becoming approved.
Yes.
By the National Football League. We'll talk about a few of them here. And, again, these are the ones that have been approved for playing rule purposes. You can no longer leap over the long snapper on field goals and extra points, which Lance and I mentioned these briefly on Monday. I think that's a good rule because, to me, that's trying to exploit a protection loophole when you're trying to protect the long snapper.
I could not agree with you more, John, and we've all talked over the last several years, especially about how the league is trying to enhance safety. And it just seems to me allowing that to happen, you're just asking for somebody to get hurt.
Yeah, because the guy's up in the air, he can get flipped, bust a knee, back,
to me, it was
head,
a no-brainer.
Whatever.
It was a no-brainer.
Absolutely agree. The competition committee made permanent the rule that disqualifying a player who is penalized twice in one game for certain types of unsportsmanlike fouls. How many guys got tossed out of games last year with that? Two? Three?
I thought there was
just
only
one. Was it Kelsey? Was that the only
I
one?
I thought he was the only one.
You know, I think Kelsey was the only one, actually. Good call.
Could be wrong.
So not
but
a big
I thought
deal.
It was one.
And we talked about it when that rule got implemented. That wouldn't be that big of a factor.
There's nothing wrong with
in
it.
Terms of that. No. Another competition committee adoption changes the spot of the next snap after a touchback resulting from a free kick to the 25-yard line for 1 year only. So that's an extension of the thing they tried out last year to move it to the 25.
Right.
They're trying to get fewer kickoffs, et cetera, et cetera. We know safety. Gives a receiver running a pass route defenseless player protection. So I guess that means if he's in the middle of a route, even if the quarterback's outside the pocket, you can't lay him out. Would that be the detail on that, I guess?
That's what that sounds like to me. I did not get a video explanation of it. NFL Network's been doing a good job of giving you, like, videos to show you what they mean.
I haven't seen that one either.
I haven't seen that one.
I guess my thought,
so I'm a little hazy.
Here's my thought, and this is my thought. Or maybe if it's within 5 yards. Because we've seen guys get laid out. Maybe if a guy's running a shallow cross within 5 yards of the line of scrimmage, you can't blow him up. You can contact him, but you can't.
Maybe.
Blow them up.
I want to see more about what they mean by that before I make any observations.
And like we spoke about on Monday, most of these, like this role, is player safety related as the NFL
tries to
protect.
And quite frankly,
players.
I will say this. Anything that helps player safety is a good thing. Let's not kid ourselves about that. Regardless of what we think about the rule, if it cuts down on injuries, it's good.
This is makes a crackback block by a backfield player who's in motion, even if he is not more than 2 yards outside the tackle box. So you can't do the crackbacks at the line of scrimmage. Now, again, another safety issue.
Don't have a problem with that one either.
Me neither. Sideline replay monitor replaced with a handheld tablet. Authorizes designated members of the officiating department to make the final decision on replay reviews. That will. And now, see, I like this idea. And I know you're probably old school, so you probably don't.
I'm mixed. See, I'll tell you why, but you go first.
I don't like the tablet because, to me, I'm afraid the tablet's not going to work.
Exactly.
But here's what I do
like
about it.
That's what I don't like about it.
I like the idea of the people back in New York in the league offices having more control over what the final decisions on some of these things are. Because, to me, that if you have that same group of people making decisions on all the things and all the games, it's going to be more consistent. Because you have the same group of people analyzing every play. That's
great
why
point.
I don't have a big issue with
great
it now.
Point.
I want to make what I would do is almost have a whole officiating crew back there, or at least a couple guys to work with Dean Blandino, who's obviously not an official, even though he's a lot to do with the rules, to help make those decisions. But I like it's like what they do with Major League Baseball. They have it centralized, and you get consistent calls, I think, because you have the same group of people analyzing each play.
I am totally in agreement with what you said.
I'm surprised
by that. I also believe that the tablet is a very, very dangerous move because we know electronics do not always work 100% of the time.
I'm sure the monitor will be there as a backup, you would think.
Right? I'm sure it would be, but, you know, I feel more comfortable with the hardwired monitor. And also, quite frankly, I don't know look, I've never been under the hood for a replay monitor. I don't know how big that monitor is. Chances are, though, it's bigger than the tablet they're going to give the official, right? The tablet's probably going to be...
Tablet will be like,
No, more than this.
No, that'll be as big as it would ever be.
Okay. Mm-hmm. Isn't the monitor... Again, I don't know this, folks, so I'm a little bit in the dark here, but isn't the monitor under the hood bigger than this?
I would think so, yeah.
Well?
Yeah, but I think that goes back, though, that the people back in New York will be the ones making that decision, more so than not. But look, I agree.
I'd still like him to get the best view.
Yeah, and you would want the thing larger because you see better.
No, right.
No disagreement.
Right.
And
then, can I add one other
thing? Of course.
I'd like to add an appendix to this rule.
Appendix?
Yes.
Well, a Paul appendix.
I'd like to add a part C to the rule. What I would like to do is, since the official who is in charge of buzzing down for replays in the final 2 minutes of the half and the final 2 minutes of a game, remember, he's the only one who can buzz downstairs to say we want a review. What I would like to do is extend his authority that when an official during the course of a game at any time makes a mistake spotting the ball or makes a mistake with the down, which has happened, I would like him to be able to correct that. Because if he is a league authorized official who was upstairs anyway,
yeah, why not?
And is part of the communication, why can't he, hey, you guess what, guys? You marked 4 yards off on that offsides. You
should
screwed
be five.
Up on a yard.
Yeah.
It should be five. Why can't he buzz down and fix that?
And then the final two minor rules before we say goodbye to our folks on Twitter, makes it unsportsmanlike conduct to commit multiple fouls on the same down designated to manipulate the game clock. Now, what that means is that if you're a defensive team, and let's say it's 3rd and 6 and the clock is running.
Yeah.
You commit an offsides penalty right away to stop the clock. They're not going to let you do that multiple times in order to manipulate the clock. No one's ever – I think I saw one team do that last year at the end of a game. I think it was the Niners? Was it Chip Kelly that did it? Somebody did it at the end of a game last year where they used a penalty to stop the clock, and that's why it's obviously in the mix here. Maybe it's Baltimore?
I've never seen it happen.
I've seen it happen once.
Okay.
Or at least I've heard about it once. I wasn't watching the game. But it did happen, I think, once this year. And then finally, make actions to conserve time illegal after the 2-minute warning of either half. I'm not sure what that means. I got to be honest with you.
Actions to conserve time
makes
illegal?
Actions to conserve time illegal after the 2-minute warning of either half. I don't know what that means.
I'm clueless. I don't understand the rule.
I'm sure it's related to the one before that where maybe it's like, you know, getting the officials to stop the clock to have a conversation with them or something like that.
Equipment change?
Maybe. Anyway. So those are the rules. And then there's some bylaw stuff too, which I'm not going to get into because people don't really care about that. And that's it.
Okay.
And this is a resolution proposal, permits a contract or non-contract, non-football employee to interview with and be hired by another club during the playing season, provided the employer club has consented. So if you're a salesman working for the Giants, they can, as long as they give you permission, you can go interview with the Philadelphia Eagles.
Okay.
Very exciting.
Yeah, that's not going to have much impact on Sunday.
I heard the Eagles are knocking down your door, man. See, now you would be able to, you know, have an interview during the season. We know you love Philadelphia and you love the Eagles. So
I have a call block on the Eagles.
All right, thanks for joining us on Twitter, everybody. Go to Giants.com or the Giants mobile app to check out the rest of the show. We'll be with you for 5 more minutes, then we'll be joined by Mark Tauscher. Covers the Packers and the Badgers, and we'll talk about some of the guys coming out of Wisconsin. What do you got for me, Paul Dodds?
There was one rule that I noticed the Star Ledger quoted John Mara as saying he was hoping that they would get to vote on the opt-out on Color Rush. Did you see that?
You know what, though?
Now, I like the Giants' all-white Color Rush.
Because
that really was cool.
Because it's more of a throwback uniform than it is necessarily a Color Rush uniform.
Correct.
Then you have, like, the Jaguars' Color Rush uniforms, and you want to jump into a wood chipper.
They're just horrific. And
right.
So, you know, my problem with the whole Color Rush thing is that most of them were just horrible.
Right.
They were hideous.
Yeah, there were some teams that were smart, like the Giants, Dallas.
Didn't the Jets do like a throwback too?
I think the Jets had
They originally had the all green, and they got rid of that this year. I thought they went to all white.
They
this
did.
Year.
Maybe
yes.
You're right.
Yes.
But there are some teams that use it as a way to go to throwback jerseys. The Cowboys use ones with the stars on their shoulders.
And I'm good with that.
Yeah, and a couple other teams. I think the 49ers might have went back to the 80s throwbacks when they did theirs. So there are some teams that use it for throwbacks, and I think that's cool.
Fine.
But
that's why they had throwbacks for the last 10 years. Every once in a while, they'll come up with these throwback weekends.
Those, like, all-teal Panther jerseys?
Oh, the unicolor jerseys with the pants.
They're rough.
The monochrome, they call them. Monochrome uniforms.
Yes, that's correct.
Horrific. They must all go. They must all be burned. They must all be donated to some poor country that needs clothing. Anyway. Maybe they wouldn't want it. Maybe they would turn it back. Boom, return to sender. We don't want them.
Well, there's a bunch of people with Super Bowl champion Falcon shirts somewhere.
Indeed.
And if they have two, they could have one back from when they lost to the Broncos, too.
Indeed, they could.
All right, so we'll Mark Tauscher in a couple minutes here, Paul. Anything that's kind of – it's been quiet with, you know, because it is why. You know, usually you'll start getting leaks of, you know, what guys are going up draft board, what guys are going down draft boards. I think since pro days are still going on and these scouting staffs haven't come back to their facilities yet, I think it's still pretty quiet on that front, which is why we haven't heard about a lot of, you know, front office chatter and scout chatter on these draft picks.
Well, you know what's funny, John? For me, I like to check on the injury situation with a bunch of the guys like Ramchick, and we're going to hear from Mark in just a bit.
And those rechecks haven't happened yet, by the
way. Those haven't. Mm-hmm. And that is like the next, for me, the next, I don't know, landmarker when we start getting more news about these
checkpoint.
Guys.
Checkpoint. You like checkpoint?
Checkpoint's good, too. I like that, too. So, I mean, that's the next one where you start getting some rumblings because now all of a sudden you hear, well, this guy's shoulder's not doing so well, or this guy's knee wasn't doing so well. You know, Davis's ankle isn't doing so well. That's all of a sudden now we start talking about, well, how far could that guy drop?
Yeah.
Because he's hurt.
You know, one other thing we didn't hear about this year, and I'm happy we didn't, we didn't hear about one positive drug test at the combine yet. Now, maybe one happened and we don't know about it, but usually you'll get at least one of those every year. And so far, good for the prospects coming out. We haven't got one of those yet.
Cross fingers that there were none. And also thumbs up for people who didn't leak it, because I'm never
Correct.
A big fan of that either.
Right. And the teams obviously have all that information. It's just, you know, not public, which it should be public to begin with. So
I agree.
Absolutely right. All right, now we're joined by our guest, Mark Tauscher, former offensive lineman for the Packers, former offensive lineman for the Wisconsin Badgers. Now he covers both out there in Wisconsin. Mark, you got John Schmelk and Paul Dottino in East Rutherford, New Jersey. Thanks for the time today, man. How's it going?
Yeah, it's going great. How are you guys doing?
We're doing fantastic,
Wonderful.
Mark. And we figure who better than to talk about the big offensive lineman coming out of Wisconsin than a big offensive lineman that's in Wisconsin. So here we go. Let's start with Ryan Ramchick here. Obviously, the injury factor, you're not a doctor. We're not going to have you give us details on the hip thing because he'll always recheck it a few.
I do have a master's degree, though, for the record.
Okay, very good. What is your master's degree in, Mark, if you don't mind me asking?
It's in educational administration, so I did not get my doctorate, but I could definitely play one on radio.
Well, excellent. So how about this? Put on your stethoscope for me. What do you think and what are you hearing about the prognosis for Ramchick's hip? When do they think, at this early point in the process, that he would be able to resume some type of football activity for whatever team that drafts him?
Well, that's a great question. I'm not a doctor, so I can't answer.
he's killing us.
I think with Ramchick, you know, anytime you have surgery, it's a concern. But, I mean, the kid is 21. You know, he's a young guy, and I don't think that's going to be any concern. And I think with, you know, the projections of where they're thinking about drafting him with different teams, he really played well last year. And I think in a group that is not as strong this year, I think he's at the top of most people's list from an offensive tackle standpoint. My guess is he'd be ready to go by training camp. Would be just an educated guess, but I think that would probably be the case.
Well, let me ask you this, Mark. From your perspective as a guy who played tackle in the NFL, let's just say that he's got to rehab anyway a certain amount of months, no matter when he actually gets on the field. He does have some rehab ahead of him, and he's going to have to learn the speed and everything else that comes with being a professional player. Is it going to be too much to ask for him to step in week one as a rookie and be able to start right away, given the fact that, again, this whole offseason, I don't know how much he's really able to do?
I think that's a fair question. If he's able to get back for training camp, I don't think, there's always going to be an adjustment from being a rookie to going against the guys that you're going to be playing against consistently. Because, in the Big Ten, when you're playing Ohio State and you're playing Michigan, you're playing against good players that are also more than likely going to be drafted. But now you have to do that week in, week out, snap in, snap out. And so health-wise, if he's able to get ready and be healthy enough to do training camp, I don't think it's too much. I think with the way if you draft a guy in the first round, you're expecting him, if all health checks out, to get out there and play. And there's going to be some growing pains anytime you put a young player out in that position. Are they going to be as consistent as they are in year two and year three? No, but you grow on the job, and maybe you do a little bit of helping early on to get the confidence up. But no, I think if he's able to go, through training camp, I would think when you use a pick that high, you would put him out there and let him kind of learn on the job.
We're joined by Mark Tauscher. More on Ryan here, Mark. He's an interesting story. He goes to a really small school, Stevens Point, if memory serves. He's only with Wisconsin for 1 year, and he basically dominates and shows that he could be a future left tackle. How much did you see him get better from the beginning of the year to the end of the year, and how much upside do you think is left as he continues to get more experience playing against high-level competition?
Oh, I think he's going to continue to grow. I mean, like you said, he came, he redshirted here, and I think the coaches and everybody kind of saw that he had a lot of talent. And then, it's one thing when you're doing practice, taxi squad, and then you get put up and you're playing, up in Michigan and you're playing Ohio State. He continued to get better the entire season. I thought his run blocking got better. And you never really looked. He didn't give up a lot of pressures. He did a really good job protecting the passer. I think his footwork is really good. And I think he's going to be able to put some more good weight on where he's going to get stronger. I think his upside is he's got a lot because, as you mentioned, he hasn't played a lot of football. He's a young guy that, played at UW-Stevens Point, redshirted, and then played 1 year of Big Ten football. So I think his upside is high. And when you look at, the history of linemen playing at Wisconsin and going to the NFL, it's a pretty strong track record.
What do you think about his football acumen, Mark? Is he the kind of guy who does pick up stuff very quickly? Because you could talk all you want about great upside, but at the same time, that lack of experience at the big-time level, only having one season at Wisconsin, you could also argue and say, well, he hasn't been seasoned enough, and now he's going to be thrown into the NFL fire rather quickly.
Yeah, it's a fair point, but you can also say, boy, he has not had a lot of wear and tear on his legs and his knees and everything else. So, yeah, there's going to be, regardless if you played 4 years and you started all 4 years, there is a transition to going to the NFL. And I think the big thing is you have to really be consistent and you have to be really sound in your technique because everybody you're going against can beat you at any play, whereas when you're in college, if you're playing a Ball State or you're playing some teams with maybe not as much talent, you can get by with some things. You learn quickly in the NFL. You have to be on top of it. But from a football acumen standpoint, picking up things and, being able to pick up stunts and knowing which linebacker you have and what kind of blitzes come, that just comes from reps. And I think that's where, the upside and, the big question is athletically, can he do it? Because mentally, I think he is, he's in a great spot, from the standpoint of he's a hard worker. He's not a big talker. He's a guy that just goes out there and is productive. And although it's only one season, that's all you can go off of, it was a really good season that he played.
Well, let's talk about it physically then, Mark, and this will be the last question for me on Ramczyk. Do you think he has the physical attributes to be a left tackle in this league, or maybe not a left tackle, but at least an elite pass-protecting tackle in the National Football League? Does he have the feet? Does he have the technique with hand placement? And if not, where do you think he needs to make the improvements to get there?
I think like every young player, you're going to find some things that you maybe thought you were really good at that you need to improve on. And I think with Ryan, his footwork is good. He's got the quick feet that you need. He gets out of his stance. He's going to put himself in a position. Now, is he strong enough to hold up against big-time bull rushers? That's something you're going to find out. And okay, I think him getting stronger and being able to have the footwork that he does and the, the positioning, he knows where to go, those things are all positives. But I think there's always going to be, you can think that you can project a guy to do this, but until you get him up there, that's why the draft is such a crapshoot. But physically, there's no doubt in my mind, he has the skills to get the job done. You have to love the guys that have been around him. His mental approach, he is a, you know, it's a no-nonsense. He's gonna go out there and he's going to work hard. He doesn't give up on snaps. And those are the things you look for when you have the talent that he has. So you never want to say that there's never a chance, but, man, he has the skills to be a good offensive tackle in the NFL.
All right, before we get to the second marquee player on Wisconsin, I'm just going to ask you one final question about Ramczyk. Well, what you're hearing, and obviously in Wisconsin, you're hearing a lot of stuff about teams who are interested, teams who have looked at him, talked to the Badgers about him. Are you sensing he's going to be available in the 20s when the Giants pick? I mean, a lot of people think that he would be on their radar. Is that realistic for the Giants?
Giants are at 23, by the way, Mark. Yeah.
I think it's real. I definitely think it's realistic. Now, you just never know with – I don't think this is the strongest class of offensive linemen that the draft has had in a while, but you see with what free agency is doing and how people are paying their guards and their tackles it is a position that people are really valuing. And would I be shocked if somebody reached and grabbed him in the late teens? No, but I think from just listening, you've seen some mock drafts where he's went to where you guys are at. They've even had some where he's went to Green Bay at 29. I don't think he's going to get that far. Mm-hmm. I would be surprised if he lasts past 25. And my guess is if the he's available and the Giants are picking, I could definitely see them snapping him up.
All right. Thanks, Mark Tauscher, Wisconsin, Green Bay, covers him on the radio, former offensive lineman for both as well. T.J. Watt, Mark, you know, I almost feel bad for the kid. He's the younger brother of J.J. Watt.
a lot of shoes to fill.
I wouldn't feel too bad.
Well, no, I wouldn't either, especially since he's probably going to be a first-round pick and make a whole lot of money, or at least be an early second-round pick. I feel like as this draft process has gone along, people have almost been surprised at how well he tested out athletically at the combine. How much do you think those numbers he put up in Indianapolis will help him come draft day, where teams think, you know what, maybe this guy does have the traits to be a really, really good edge rusher in the National Football League?
Oh, I think it helped him immensely. And you know, I'm a guy that look at the film. The film is where I would judge almost all of my evaluation.
Yeah, me too.
But those things, there is when you're evaluating and you see a guy that you think, oh, you know what, he's a really good player, but can this translate to the next level? And that's where you look at, you know, the 10-yard sprint, the 40 and the 10, you know, their explosion, what they're jumping. He tested through the roof. So that just validates what you see on film. And when you look at what he's been able to do rushing the passer, he caused all kinds of problems. I'm talking every game that he played in, they'd have to double-team him. He was constantly in the backfield. He has a really good sense for when you're running stunts, you know, the timing of it. I think, you know, the fact that his brother is a great player only helps him. So I thought his testing and where he was at the combine only helped him, because I think there was a real question whether or not he should stay at Wisconsin for another year. But I think those questions have been answered by how well he's tested. And like you just mentioned, you know, he's projected to go in the first round, where I think he was probably a second or third round projection before his numbers came back from the combine.
Well, now, Mark, let me ask you this. As he makes the move to the NFL, and there are teams that are very sold on, we're going to play 4-3. Others say we're going to play a hybrid, 4-3-3-4. Others say we're just going to be a 3-4, and we're going to take some of these guys who are, quote, tweeners, and we're going to put their hand in the dirt in the sub-package. Where would you like to see him play in the NFL to maximize his potential in terms of a scheme?
I think he's a 3-4. I mean, you saw what he did at Wisconsin. He didn't have his hand in the dirt. He was, you know, typically standing up, not only in coverage, but with, you know, just coming off the edge, setting it with the run game. I think he's a 3-4 outside linebacker. Not to say that he can't, you know, how you would project him if you have a 4-3 front, but, you know, good pass rushers find a way to get it done, regardless of what system they're in. But there's no doubt the system he's been in, he's been standing up, and that has served him very well.
Yeah. All right, Mark, I want to stick on the defensive side of the ball here. Two other guys that could be middle or late-round picks, Vince Beagle, the outside linebacker, and Sojourn Shelton, the cornerback. Give us a lowdown on those two guys and what teams would be getting if they decide to draft either one of those two guys coming out of Wisconsin.
I think the thing you love about both those guys is that, you know, they love football, and it's important to them, which I think when you're – you know, adding up the big equation, that is as important, if not anything else, with, you know, if you have the physical skill set, if you have the attitude and the mentality, that makes a big difference. And with Vince Beagle, you know, he loved playing at Wisconsin. He loves playing football. His energy was great. I thought his leadership this last year, and with him and Watt off the edge, it was a big part of why the Wisconsin defense was the way it was. So he's a guy that you're gonna know what you're gonna get. You're gonna get a lot of effort. You're gonna get high energy. He brings it every day. He's talented. I thought he tested really well. So he's another guy that I think you're gonna plug in and is gonna be an instant, really good player on special teams. He played most of the special teams at Wisconsin, and as a fourth year starter, I don't know how many guys you see do that. So he's a guy that I think you'd get great value in. If you get him, you know, mid rounds, you're gonna feel really good about him being a special teams guy and a chance to really grow into being a guy that you can count on in rushing the passer. And as far as Sojourn Shelton goes, you know, in covering the games, he didn't get beat a lot. And with some of the other defensive backs, the ball never really went his way. And he made plays on the ball. I think he is going to be a sleeper. I don't know where he's going to get picked because, you know, from a height standpoint, he doesn't have all the kind of those tangible things that you're looking for. But, man, he was just a really good player for a long time. And typically those guys that you see that on film, he's a guy I would want on my football team.
Well, that's why we ask these folks from all around the country like yourself to give us some insight as to what these guys are. We don't just like reading draft guides because you guys know them better than we do and better than some of these guides do. The last one I want to ask you about, Mark, is Corey Clement because he's a Jersey guy. He's had some off-the-field issues. Some people have questioned his work ethic. But when you look at a guy who's 5'10 and 220-something pounds and he's cut out of stone, you know some scout is going to want a campaign for him to be drafted.
Yeah, I think physically he is, you know, he's built. I mean, he looks the part. Now, I thought his junior year was disappointing. He, you know, had the injury and there was a lot of, you know, kind of questions circling, but you have to love the fact he came back last season. I thought his attitude, there's no doubt he wanted to leave, I think, and go to the NFL as a junior. It didn't work out. And instead of being disappointed and not working hard, he put in more effort. I thought he kind of almost reframed his body. And when he was out there running, it made a huge difference for this team. And offensively, with what they were able to do, he's a workhorse. He's a physical downhill back that I think, you know, is he going to be a guy that you're going to count on for a lot of catches out of the backfield? Not necessarily, but I think a first and second down back and a guy that is not afraid to put his nose in there and block a little bit as well. He's a guy that I think would be worth taking a look at because when he was healthy and when he was motivated, especially in his last season, he was an incredibly productive player for the university.
Hey, Mark, my partner didn't have the guts to ask you about the second running back, but I'm going to try the name. Dare Umbwale. Am I close?
Close. I'll tell you what. In doing some of the games, it's Ogumbawale.
Oh.
And I always was hoping we would just call him Dare because it was really hard to do it, but I have to tell you, I love this kid. He is as polished of a student athlete. I mean, with everything else that he's got, he's a great speaker, and I know that doesn't have to do anything with football, but for a guy coming out of the backfield, and he was thrown into the mix his junior year, you know, he was one of the last guys on the roster, and he came in and is a really good pass-catching running back. He is a great third-down back. Now, is he somebody you want to give, you know, 20 carries a game to? No. But he is a guy that you want in your locker room. He is a great leader, and I think the respect that he has from, if you talk to any of the running backs that have come through here, they all speak really highly of him. Don't be surprised if he makes an impact. You saw what James White did with the Patriots.
Yeah, interesting.
I'm not saying he could be James White, but, man, he has a skill set that in today's NFL on a third down, he can be a guy that you can really count on.
I'm going to mark him down now as a sleeper because I suspect from everything that I've seen, he's a late third-day pick, Mark. So maybe you're letting this in on a diamond in the rough here.
Yeah, I think that I know, you know, as a Packer guy, I think he'd be a great fit up here, but he is going to be somebody that is going to be hard to keep off of your roster because he is an impressive young man. I'll say that, and I think he has a skill set that probably gets overlooked a little bit. Don't be surprised if he has a nice NFL career.
Wow.
Mark, two more quickies. One, I like to ask these guys that cover these big conferences, doing the Badger games and being there and watching these other great Big Ten teams come in, who did you see on the opponents' teams this year that really jumped out at you that maybe people aren't talking about as much as you think they should? And you sat there and you watched them on Saturday and you said, wow, that dude's going to be a hell of a pro.
You know what? I can think back. There was a and the guy got drafted last year, so I know it doesn't do you any good for your question, but I saw Dean Lowry from Northwestern 2 years ago, and I was like, man, that guy is physical and is just one tough SOB. There's when you look at offensive line, but the guy that jumped out to me was Jabril Peppers from Michigan, and how versatile he was.
No surprise.
And how you had to keep an eye on where he was. Whenever you played against Michigan, they put him in so many different spots, and I know he's an easy answer because he's going to be a first-round pick. But when you ask about jumping out and looking at the film and seeing what happens, he just leaped out at you, and it was he's an impressive athlete, and I think with what he's able to do athletically, he is going to be a versatile player that defenses are going to have a lot of fun trying to figure out how to make him the most impactful.
And then, Mark, finally, obviously, Ben McAdoo now head coach of the Giants, someone that was in Green Bay. So they brought a lot of that Green Bay offense over here, running a lot of the same stuff. I just figured I'd give you a chance to we always talk about, from the Giants' perspective, the NFC Championship game from 2007, season 2008. Obviously, it was an unbelievable game in terms of the weather. Not so unbelievable for you guys in terms of the result, obviously.
Yeah, I was gonna say that.
But what are some of your memories from that season and from some of the big games that you played against the Giants over the course of your career?
I have to admit, I was hoping we didn't have to talk about that.
That's why I saved it for last, Mark.
There's different games that you go in and, you know, you have a home NFC Championship game, which is all you could ask for.
Yeah.
The Giants came in and beat us. You know, I know the game went to overtime, but in looking back on it, they were more physical. They, you know, that team beat us, and there's no, you know, we had opportunities to win the game, but as much as it hurts to just be blunt about it, that team beat us that day and was a better team. So it was painful. I appreciate you bringing that up as I'm heading out to go grab lunch, but the rivalry, I think the games, I wasn't on the team in 2011, but
right.
That loss to the Giants was devastating. And that was a team that, for the most part, all season was the best team in the league. Offensively, it was a juggernaut. And defensively, that day, Eli just has a way of winning games to come in and do what he did in that championship game with Plaxico and throw the football as effectively in those conditions. You tip your cap, and he has done that in a lot of big games. For a long time for you guys.
You know, Mark, and it's funny, you know, people look at the 2007 regular season record and they say, boy, that Giant team really wasn't very good. But I think what you have to do is that the way they played in the playoffs that year is the way they played the following year in 2008 when they went 13-3. And that team, week three for the Giants that year, was so much different than the team that played you guys in the championship game. And it was just it's odd. And I don't think people realize this, how much an NFL team can change from the beginning of the year to the end of a year and really resemble a completely different group of guys after going through 4 months of war.
Yes, and I think that's where coaching really shows because, you know, the good teams always start peaking and playing well after Thanksgiving. You're going to have some growing pains, especially with the limited amount of contact that you have now in training camp and developing your young talent so that they're productive players for you at the end of the season. I know the Giants, when we beat them early in that season, we felt really good about it. And it was, like you just said, a totally different team and a team that was playing really good football, especially defensively. And I think that's where coaching really shows, it really shows at the end of seasons because, you know, the teams that aren't improving typically don't make the playoffs.
Mark, I appreciate the time today. Awesome stuff. Sorry for bringing
great
up the
stuff.
Bad memory.
Great
I apologize for that. I'll take the hit on
reality.
That
reality. You have to deal with reality. I appreciate you guys.
We hope we get to see you in the playoffs. It'd be fun to meet you.
Absolutely, Mark. Thank you so much.
You bet. Thanks, guys.
That's Mark Toucher, former Packer, former Badger. Great stuff out of him.
Never remember talking to him when he was a player, but my goodness, he was just dynamite.
Master's degree,
great.
Man.
Ooh. He was great. And
hey, you know, Sean Howard always tells us, smartest guys in the field. Offensive lineman.
What a surprise.
I'm not sure that's true all the time, but Sean Howard would claim that at least.
And you know what? Who's going to argue with him?
And Mark Toucher, a great example. He was fantastic.
Oh, and we got David Deal on our broadcast team, too.
Absolutely.
So we're very lucky to have some offensive linemen to protect our backs, too.
Old school Carl Nelson?
Yeah, absolutely. No doubt. One thing he said that I thought was very interesting, if we could just play off this for one moment.
Absolutely.
When he talked about Ramczyk, and he did not seem to have much concern about the downtime for rehab or the fact that he'd only played 1 year in Wisconsin. He seems to think that he's a learned kid who is very quick to pick things up, who has terrific technique, and that he could start week one for a team.
He said strength is the biggest thing.
I mean, that blew me away.
Which, by the way, and that's why it could be a worry. If you have a hip thing and you're rehabbing the hip, you cannot work your lower body at all.
No.
So that's why I'm with you.
I'm a little leery.
I think there is a red – whether or not that red flag turns out
yellow?
To be something
bad. Yellow? How about a yellow?
Bad,
yellow light?
Caution. Caution. I think that's fair. All right, here we go. Let's go to the calls at 201-939-4513. Guys, thanks for hanging with us. We appreciate it. Let's go to Sean in Brooklyn on line three. He will lead us off first on Big Blue Kickoff. Sean, how are you, buddy?
Hi, how are you? First time caller, long time listener.
Wonderful. Huh. Welcome aboard, Sean. Thanks for being part of the show.
Hi. I got two questions. I want to talk about the offensive line. I got a little configuration. I want to know what you guys think.
Sure.
I see everybody's complaining about Flowers, and they always talk about his production in the run game. I was thinking about, why don't we look for a left tackle in the draft? We got the 23rd pick. People are talking about Ramczyk. I mean, we could probably get somebody and mold them in, or maybe during the cuts, we could get somebody that's picked up that could produce. I was thinking about moving Flowers on the right, put DJ Fluker on the left, with John Jerry at his right guard position, Pugh in the left guard, and, you know, and we set up that format like that. And with the tight end addition of Ellison, I think that will provide enough coverage and protection for Eli, especially when we go three wide, you know, have the running back coming out the backfield. What do you guys think about that?
Sean, we appreciate your creativity. And we understand what you're trying to do, but unfortunately, Fluker struggled enough with his feet playing right tackle and right guard with San Diego. And really, if you watch the tape, that's his weakness. He doesn't have great balance. He falls down a lot. He's just not that fluid with his feet. I don't think he would survive well on the left side at left tackle. And quite frankly, right now, I think Eric Flowers is a better left tackle than DJ Fluker would be.
Yeah. DJ Fluker is a bulldozer meant to play the right side. He is not one of those guys who really can flop.
Yeah, even Sean, when he came out, when, you know, people thought he could be a dominating right tackle
Correct.
In the league, even
I was one.
Right. Even at his highest pinnacle of that evaluation, people did not think he was going to be able to play left tackle.
I did not.
Right.
Do you remember Kareem McKenzie?
I have.
Okay.
I,
do you remember Kareem?
I'm looking at him as a McKenzie mold. You
and,
know,
and
like
Kareem.
Flowers.
Well, yeah, the point I want to make to you, though, is that
know
Kareem.
How he was a mall of us. I think his strength and the fact that he's having problems with the block, but being on that his strongness comes within the run game. I think putting him on the right will open up that run game amazingly. I don't know why I feel that way. I mean, I've been listening to all the antics. I mean, we brought back BDBD after the injury and stuff like that. He couldn't perform up to the levels that we're accustomed to. But I'm just saying, like, if we could get a decent enough left tackle, especially with the, you know, with the addition of the tight end, I mean, putting Flowers on the right, I could just imagine how Paul Perkins and them guys will have a field day with that run game.
Well, I understand what you want to do because you want to improve the run game. You want to improve the bulk and the strength and the power on the right side, and there's nothing wrong with that.
That makes sense.
But the other thing that has to happen for you to do that doesn't really bode well. And the reason I bring up McKenzie is because Kareem McKenzie was an all-pro caliber. He didn't make one, but he was an all-pro caliber right tackle. He was very, very good. And I once talked to Kareem, and I know at some point in his career he was actually asked, would you want to try the left side? And
did he say no?
Yes, he
yeah,
said
I'm
no.
Here.
He said no. Kareem said no. I know I'm not a left tackle. It wasn't out of selfishness. He knew that the way he was built, the way his athleticism was limited, especially foot speed, he knew that he was not suited to excel on that other side. He knew it. And he's like, no, they put me over there. It's going to be a mistake, and I'm not going to do very well. I'm built for this. I do this very well. Let's just keep it here. Kareem did not want to take one snap on the left side because he knew what he was. I would say to you, I think Fluker knows what he is, and he's not going to be flopping either.
Okay. I just have one more question.
Yes,
I know
sir.
They're picking with the 23rd pick. I was having a debate with my cousin, and he wants to go with Hassan Reddick, the linebacker, because he has the ability to play up on the line and also drop back in coverage. But I think the best move for us, if he's available, is Malik McDowell. I think with his presence alongside Snack, and we have Vernon on the side, and we have JPP on one side, I just feel like you put McDowell in there, we already got Bromley, and we're not too sure what's going to happen with Hankins. But if we could shore that middle, especially the fact that Snacks takes up so much room, you put another big guy alongside him with the athleticism to get to the quarterback, I think our defense is going to go from A for whatever we were ranked to first.
Well,
and
Sean,
that will put a lot of ease on Eli to do what he has to do to keep us ahead of the game.
I don't know.
That's just my thought.
No, and Sean, I think that's fair. I think both those guys are good players. I haven't seen Malik McDowell going that early in the first round in a lot of the mock drafts I've seen, but I think he's probably, once you get past Jonathan Allen, obviously, he's probably the best defensive tackle left after that, you know, first group.
Right.
And I think Hassan Reddick's a good football player. I think he can do a lot of different things. I think he's almost like a rich man's Devon Kennard, who can play the run well, and he could also play the middle.
I looked at Kennard, and I just said to myself, if Kennard can stay healthy, he will provide the rotational depth that they need for JPP and Vernon to rest up.
You know,
appreciate the call, Sean. We got to run, man. Thank you.
Riddick and Cunningham certainly provide value at the 23rd pick.
I don't think
you go wrong with either one of them.
I think they're different players, though.
They are different players.
I think Cunningham can be your Mike linebacker all three downs.
Cunningham's not.
Cunningham can be your Mike on all three downs. I think Riddick can be your Mike on the first two downs, but then he would rush the passer on third down.
All right, in the sub-package, he'd have a different role.
Correct.
Yeah.
But I
yeah.
think Cunningham can cover well enough where he could be your middle linebacker on third down if you wanted him to.
Yes, he wouldn't be your traditional middle, but he would be in the sub. I understand that.
Correct.
I agree.
Yeah, yeah.
I agree.
Mm-hmm.
The point is there's value there, and it depends on what you want, an apple or an orange, because they're a little different.
Yes,
but
correct.
There's value. I think there's value at 23 for either one of those guys if they're there. So I wouldn't argue with the pick, but what I was going to ask the guy before he left was, what if Jonathan Hankins, in fact, does re-sign? And the Giants have been talking very well in terms of the ownership, Mr. Tisch and Mr. Mara.
They hope they can still make it
How
happen.
How Bolt said, they still hope they can make it happen.
Hey, look, and me and Lance said this on Monday, Paul, the longer he's out there, I think the better chance there is of him coming back.
So, you know, if that happens, are you apt to go defensive line still with that number 23?
You wouldn't think. But who knows? Who knows? 201-939-4513. Jonesy is in Cornwall, New York. How you doing, Jonesy?
Hey, it's Jonesy.
I'm sorry, Jonesy.
Right.
My bad, Jonesy.
Hello.
What's up, pal?
How's it going with you guys?
Doing great, man.
Great.
What's up?
Thanks for those guests you guys put on all the time. They're fantastic to get the info from
Thank
them.
You. It's, Appreciate it.
Glad you guys like it.
So I just want to talk, you know, I know this is like kind of a weird spot for us. We're in between the draft, still like a month away, and the first wave of free agency is kind of done. Team schedules are kind of... So I was looking at the NFC East a little bit, and I'm really getting excited because way Jerry Reese has been working and through last year and this year through his offseason, I feel like he's really putting us in a really strong position in the NFC East. I mean, if you look at Washington, they lost their GM. Kirk Cousins is, you know, up in the air. That's it. Interesting situation. Dallas Cowboys, they lost both their starting cornerbacks. Their offensive lineman, I think, retired. One of their defensive linemen is gone. They just seem to be a work in progress, these teams. The only team that's kind of been quiet was Philly. You know, they're kind of making some interesting moves that make me a little nervous. But as far as the Giants go, I just feel like kudos to Jerry Reese for putting us in this situation, because for once in a long time, I feel like we're going into the draft to build the roster and not hope for guys to be starters. You know, like, and I feel like that's where we're going to become stronger. And I just wanted to get your guys' opinion on that. And also on McAdoo's comments about Geno Smith potentially being the backup for Eli. I don't agree with that. I mean, I like Geno's skill set.
Yeah.
I see the potential. But by the time Eli gets out of here, 2, 3, 4 years from now, Geno's going to be that much older. He's going to be 29, 30, and that's not the way I feel like we'd want to start.
Yeah, but Jones, here's the thing.
Quarterback.
I think Geno's the backup. I don't think Geno's your next starting quarterback. You know what I mean?
Geno's actually got to win the backup job.
Right, exactly.
That's not even sold.
That's correct.
He's not locked in as the number two opening day yet. He's got to win the job.
Josh Johnson's on the roster too, so.
You know, and who knows? The Giants may still draft somebody. Don't put that totally out of the realm of possibility.
That's true too.
What if out of the blue, all of a sudden, oh my goodness, Davis Webb?
Or heck, maybe in the first round. What if everybody gets so sour on these quarterbacks that not one is taken before the Giants go at 23? Who knows?
And all of a sudden, Trubisky's there,
or Deshaun Watson, or Kaiser. Who knows?
Who knows? Who knows?
That'd be great.
I'm gonna tell you what. I would be somewhat surprised if they took a quarterback in the first 3 rounds.
So would I.
But I would not at all be surprised if they took one from the 4th on. I would not at all. And so who knows? And maybe that kid comes in here, whoever he is. Maybe they draft somebody, and he comes in here, and he has a terrific camp, and they say, well, you know what? Maybe he should be the 2. Could happen.
Yeah.
Well, you know, I was just bringing it up like a conversation piece, but at the same time, what are your guys' opinion on my statement that, like, it's been a while since we went into a draft and we're actually kind of building back-end roster versus hoping for starters? And,
well, yes.
And we're in a stronger position.
The Giants are hoping that the draft is going to help put them over the top instead of helping them get back into the middle of it.
Yeah, I mean, I think the only two positions where you would think that you could draft a day one starter that would immediately start over somebody already here is probably offensive tackle and maybe linebacker.
Well, I think
and maybe tight end.
And defensive tackle, if Hankins doesn't come back in,
okay,
you might be able to get a day one starter there.
Fair. But Jonesy, you're right. In years past where, I mean, I remember, was it 2 years ago where we labeled 9 to 10 holes where you needed a long-term starter? That
Correct.
Is not the case anymore.
No. Not at all.
Absolutely, Jonesy. Thanks for the call, bud.
Thank you.
And I think he made a good point, too, at the first part of his call. And this is one of our mailbag questions this week on Giants.com. Or it was a fact or fiction question. How the teams in the NFC East have kind of gone about their business in free agency. And I think the two teams that have suffered the most losses, by no question, are the Redskins. Mm-hmm. Losing their general manager, losing their 2 starting wide receivers. Now, they brought in Terrell Pryor and they brought in Torrey Smith, which should mitigate those losses a little bit, no question about it. But the Cowboys lost a bunch of starters on defense, both corners, starting safety Barry Church, Morris Claiborne, Brandon Carr,
sure.
Terrell McLean on the defensive line, and then, like he mentioned, Doug Free retired. So they have some things that they need to figure out. Now they still have gave Witten a contract extension. They have
When is he going to retire?
Dude, he's like Tony Gonzalez. He's going to play until he's 37 or 38. It's unbelievable.
Incredible. He's going to go down as one of the top 5 all-time greatest tight ends to ever play.
To me, here's how I look at the division right now. The Redskins' offense is still going to be pretty good. I don't know what their defense is going to be.
No.
No idea. I think the Dallas offense is still going to be very good. I have no idea what their defense is going to look like. Look, they got the perfect defensive coordinator, Rod Marinelli, that knows how to take a bunch of pieces and make a unit competent.
This is true.
But that's competent. He's not going to turn a bunch of pieces and turn them into a top 10 defense. That's not going
to
happen.
Well, they're relying on a defensive heavy draft to fill a bunch of holes at once.
And they're actually lucky super risky, but they're lucky. And they hope maybe Jalen Smith from last year's draft can come in and give them something.
But he's still a rookie on the field, so they're all going to make rookie mistakes.
Oh, it's extremely risky. But you're right. It is a heavy defensive draft, so if you're going to do it, this is the draft to do it. But again, that defense could be a train wreck if things don't go well.
I agree.
And then you have the Eagles, who I think are going to be a lot better offensively. My guess is they're going to draft a running back. It's a deep running back draft.
Yeah.
I think they'll get an every down running back in the draft. They have Jordan Matthews at wide receiver. They added Alshon Jeffrey at wide receiver. Carson Wentz will be a year older. Mm-hmm. Lane Johnson is back from his suspension. They got a pretty good offensive line. I think the Eagles' offense is going to be improved. Is it going to be elite? No, but I think it'll be a top 15 offense.
They need a power back.
Yeah, they need a first and second
down
back.
And they're all power backs in this draft.
They could take Dalvin Cook in the first round if they wanted to.
Yeah, they could.
If Fournette's there, they could take him.
I see. For me, though, I'm not so sure right now about the pass rush.
Well, then that's the thing. Defensively for them, look,
they've relied on that pass
Brandon
rush for a
Graham's
couple years
good,
now.
And Fletcher Cox is really good. Yeah, they've let Connor Barwin go. They lost Benny Logan, who's a good football player,
yes,
a defensive tackle.
Yes, he is.
At linebacker, they have a couple players that are okay, not great. And then besides Malcolm Jenkins, their whole secondary is like Dallas.
That's it.
They're going to try to build that secondary out in the draft this year and try to help Malcolm
Jenkins.
And there's
a lot of talent in the secondary. But again, especially with DBs, they will make rookie mistakes.
Oh, yeah. Putting a rookie corner. So you've seen guys work out and be great. You've seen other guys that were supposed to be really good be messes.
Heck.
It takes time.
Just look at Landon Collins. Look at the rookie. Mm-hmm. Look at the second-year player. Yeah. You know, with a great defensive draft like this, yes, you can build and get a bunch of guys who are going to be really good, but that's going to be years 2 and 3 and 4 if they work out.
Yeah, ideally.
Not in their first year.
Yeah, ideally, second half of their first year, but that sometimes that very rarely happens
that's
with a lot of these guys.
That's asking a lot when you're replacing that many guys.
Correct. That's relying on a lot of youth.
Which is why, by the way, the Giants have really, in my mind, been very smart about trying to go for it this year with the roster moves that they've made. I think it's clear when you look at the structures of how they've kind of adjusted the ages and the contracts on this team. They're trying to make a run now, 2017.
Yeah, to me, they have they know what Eli's window is. And the way they've put this thing together with the contracts from last year and this year, they understand what the window is.
Yes.
And you're right. You look at the way they did some of the, with the contracts and all that stuff, I think they're trying to maximize their potential to make a run this year.
They really want the division championship this year and to go as far as they possibly can. And if they need a move or two to go over the top, which is why I'm going to tell you right now, I wouldn't be surprised if Jerry does make a trade during the draft.
And, Paul, I'll be honest with you.
I really wouldn't.
I think this is the best I've felt about a Giants roster and a team at this point of the year.
Since 2012.
Honestly, I might even say 2008.
You could. I thought the 11 team that came off that Super Bowl was still going to be a bona fide playoff team the next year. I never expected them not to make it at all.
Here's the thing, though. That 2011 team, the offensive line was getting older, and you knew that. That was like the last legs of that group. That was the end of it, as we all witnessed firsthand.
I was hoping they would start getting reinforcements at that point, but it didn't happen.
That was the last legs for that group. And look, the defense put things together at the end of that 2011 season, but that was not a dominant group by any means. It had holes. It had some issues. And they gave up some plays.
They did. They did.
More to me, more so.
Still thought it was a playoff team, though.
Yes, I agree.
I did,
but I think this Giant team this year could win 12 games if everybody stays healthy. And again, guys,
I wouldn't argue that.
Guys, year to year,
I would not argue that.
Year to year in the league,
or against it, I should.
A million things can change. Dallas went from what were they, 13-3 to 4-12, back up to 12-4. I mean, it's a mess. I mean, things can go anyway. It's unpredictable.
Remember
injuries.
What McAdoo said?
Yeah.
Past performance is no guarantee of what's going to happen this year.
Absolutely.
It's like the stock market.
Correct. But here's the thing. You take a look at them, though, at the roster and the talent on both sides of the ball, it's a pretty complete starting 22 you have. And even
it is.
So starting 26 if you throw in rotation.
You know, there
guys.
Are only two guys over age 30?
Yeah, I know. That's what I'm saying. These guys are all in their prime years. There's a window
and
here,
actually,
folks.
I should say three because Brandon Marshall was added just recently. Yeah. So there are three guys over age 30. Diasi, Eli, and Brandon Marshall. That's it. It's not an old team. Good mix.
All right, here we go. Two more calls before we say goodbye. Mark in Chicago's up first. Hi, Mark.
Doing. Hey.
Hi.
Hi, guys. How you doing?
Hey,
I want to echo the previous caller and thank you on all the draft college information. I'm not a big college football guy, so getting information on these guys and looking forward to the draft, it's really helpful and enjoyable to listen
to. Hey, Mark, here's the thing, and I'm always honest about this. During the NFL football season, we don't have time to watch college football.
We got college games we do ourselves, too. We can't.
Well, here's the thing. Yeah,
how are we going to do it?
Paul and I are calling FCS games on Saturdays, number one. Mm-hmm. If we're not doing that, we're traveling with the Giants on an airplane. Or three, we're going to get divorced from our wives because we're not home on the one Saturday we have off and we're not spending time with them. So
she doesn't want me home anyway.
So
it's okay.
Our ability to track this stuff during the season is hard. So
it's very hard.
This stuff is just as important for us at this time of year as it is for you, to be honest with
it
you.
It is.
Well, guys, you work for the Giants. You got great jobs. I'm really crying up a storm for you.
Mark, I'm not looking for sympathy. I'm just explaining. And look, I'm not going to sit here in the soapbox and claim to be a college football expert. I'm not.
No. This is beneficial. What John's trying to tell you is
exactly.
This is as enriching for us as it is for you guys.
Right.
It's important that we do this.
All right. Well, a couple things I wanted to get into. One, about the left tackle competition, I agree with Charlie in some regard that, you know, we're going into the second season and I'm listening to the program and we're talking about competition and backup at the left tackle slot. And I'm not going to go down the rat hole. I guess from a strategy standpoint of Jerry Reese, are we pretty much done until the draft and we figure out what happens after the draft as to whether we drafted somebody or we go for a free agent to back up Flowers or compete with Flowers?
I would bet, Mark, we're not going to see another offensive lineman added until after the draft. That's my bet. I can't guarantee anything, but I think that makes sense.
I'm going to take a guess, okay, and it's a guess. We're not piped into the office upstairs that the only signing you may see before the draft would be Jonathan Hankins. That would be my guess.
Mm-hmm. Okay.
Yeah, I think that's fair.
All right, and I know you guys are running low on time. I just wanted to make a comment about the bracket challenge. I don't think you guys have talked about that at all.
Go ahead.
And you know, it's a fun little game, and it was interesting to watch. And, you know, LT winning or North Carolina winning, you know, I don't have a problem with. But when I look at the voting, and I appeal to the vault of Paul Dottino on this, when I see guys like Rosie Brown, who is in the Hall of Fame, 9 Pro Bowls in 13 years, Frank Gifford, attributed his Hall of Fame career to Rosie Brown, and Sam Huff, who helped redefine, one of the guys who helped redefine the role of the middle linebacker in modern-day football, Hall of Fame. When these guys don't get voted in past the first round, I know we got a younger, you know, audience than I am.
It's the internet.
And I'm like, man, it drives me crazy.
That's what it is, man.
Yeah, Mark, you hit it. And thanks for the call, man. We appreciate it. You're absolutely right.
Young audience with the internet. That's what's going to happen. And besides, the truth of the matter is, we all know this, history tends to get forgotten a lot of times. That's why I'm here.
It's always what happens.
To try to help remember.
It's always what happens in the present is what dominates. It's just the way it is.
I know.
Just the way it is.
Yep.
And you have to expect that going in.
No question.
And frankly, we set up the brackets understanding that the people that are more current are probably going to get more of the votes. I was happy to see LT win. And LT is not just LT, by the way. It's LT and Hakeem Nicks. And
yes.
Hakeem Nicks, people, I know Hakeem Nicks will be kind of forgotten in history a little bit. Because he had such a bad end of his career here because of all the injuries and all that stuff, which is a shame. He was the most important, besides Eli, the most important offensive player in that 4-game playoff run in 2011.
He was huge.
He was that good.
You could make an argument that Mario Manningham, who had caught a touchdown pass in each one of those postseason games, was right there. Obviously, he caught the one in the Super Bowl on the sideline. But Nicks was a huge weapon. In fact, consistently, even though Manningham had caught the touchdown passes, I think you would say throughout the four quarters of each one of those games, I would agree with you.
And big plays from Nicks, too.
Big plays.
You know, they had that deep crossing pattern running catch. He had the Hail Mary catch, a bunch of them. So, you know, he got them that ring. That's huge.
They don't win without him.
No, absolutely not. Alex in Brooklyn, he's up next. Hi, Alex. How are you? Going to wrap up our show today. What's up?
Hey, fellas. Thanks for the call. I'm formerly Alex from Sacramento, but I moved back home.
Ah, well, here I am. Welcome back to the East Coast, Alex.
Thanks for bringing the sunshine today.
And you chose the right borough to move to.
So I'll probably call another time when there's more time to chat on things. I had a couple questions for you guys, but I think we're up against the clock. My main thing is I'm worried that if Ramchick goes, you know, before the 23rd, great interviews, by the way. You guys are so well prepared and ask great questions.
Thank you.
I'm curious about which other tackles do we believe are potentially starter ready? And if there's, if those happen to go before us, I'm kind of wondering who to cheer for with our first round. And then secondly, just so much props to Jerry Reese for everything that he's done over the last couple of years, filling gaps. Right now, we're kind of building our team instead of looking starters, like they said. But we've done amazingly in the second round. And as a Michigan graduate, one of my biggest hopes is somehow Jabril Peppers or Taco Charlton end up on this team. And I'm wondering if hopefully this myth that Jabril Peppers, a lot of scouts are wary of him and all this, you know, where does he fit, that I'm hoping if we get to the second round and somehow that guy's
55?
Still available,
Alex,
up.
If you 55? If you want Taco or Peppers, and I know they go well together, you better be ready to use your first-round pick on them, all right?
55 is not happening.
No, it ain't
happening.
It ain't happening.
There's no way.
But I think both those guys would be gone in the first 40 picks.
But I do want to touch on what you said, because I said it about 5 minutes ago. I think because the Giants are playing for 2017, I do think if there's someone there they really, really want, I do think that Jerry Reese would be apt to make a deal, okay, like he did when he went up to get Landon Collins.
I do believe he would go up and make a deal.
It's expensive to move up in the first round, though.
I don't know if he could do it in the first, but I would not be surprised, especially in the second round, if he went up from 55. If they saw somebody who they thought could help them right away this year, I could see him giving up a pick next year.
And, Alex, as to your first point, I think in my humble opinion, I don't know what the Giants think upstairs in terms of the way they set their draft board up. There are two guys in this draft that have the potential, and I'm not even telling you I know for sure they can do it, that have the potential to step in their first year and play left tackle in the National Football League. The first guy is Ryan Ramczyk. The second guy is Garrett Bowles. Conversation over.
It's a real mixed bag at the top of the tackle spot.
Cam Robinson is the third guy, but to me, he's not a left tackle.
I'm not a huge fan.
And to me, the best offensive lineman overall in this draft is probably Forrest Lamp, but he's more of a guard. And maybe right tackle, but I think guard is where he's going to land. So I think, frankly, he might go over one of those two tackles, Ramczyk and Bowles, to be honest with you. So we'll see.
He's going to wind up being a Justin Pugh type.
Yeah.
A team's going to take
him. Or Zach Martin. Same type of
deal. And they're going to plug him in wherever they need him the most, and he's going to do okay, but ultimately he'll be a better guard than anywhere else.
Correct.
Awesome. Thanks so much, because I think this heat on Flowers is ridiculous in my opinion. The third year is when you truly see an offensive lineman that's drafted early really peak. And he's got the size, he's got the dedication, he doesn't talk, he's tough. Give this guy a chance in his third season
to be everything
he's supposed to be. And I'm super excited about him. And all we got to do is just lock up that other starter.
This is the show-me year for Eric Flowers. I agree with you. This is the show-me year. He's really got to put the pedal to the metal.
Now,
Let's see.
In fairness, though, and I will say this, you would have liked to see more development in a second year. And I think it's fair to say that. And I don't. And I think if you want to be a little bit worried, I get that too. But like Lance and I said yesterday, like Paul just said now, the third year is when the rubber hits the pavement and you have to start getting some traction. So hopefully he can do it. Well, and you know what? And I said this yesterday too, Paul. We can look at OTAs all we want. We're not going to know until he puts pads on and lines up across from Olivier Vernon in the second week of August until we see if that technique's gotten any better.
No, there's no question. But in answer to your question, there are not enough blue chip, rock solid. There are no Jonathan Ogdens in this draft.
Right.
Okay. So to say you're going to take someone who's a guarantee.
There's not a lot of guys in free agency either.
Hey, look, and Alex, here's the thing. We got to run. Appreciate the call. Yeah. But the show's going to end, and Dominic's getting a little hungry over there. He's not very pleasant when he's hungry. he's not pleasant when he's full either. But he's really not pleasant when he's hungry. And I've said this before, and I'll say it again. To me, the offensive tackle position is going to become a premium position in the league, even more so than it is now. It's going to be on the level of defensive end pass rusher, quarterback, period. When you look at who the top picks in the drafts are, it's usually a quarterback or pass rusher, and those are usually your top picks, maybe a wide receiver depending on the year. Because of the way the college game works now, the offensive tackle is going to be a premium position. Just look at these, Paul, these guys in free agency that I'll say it. I won't name names to it. That played poorly for a couple of years. Were not good. Got $8 to $10 million per year.
And now that you're seeing consistent money go into that position, more people may be a little more willing to play.
Right, because before they would say, "Well, do you really want to, you know, the first round expenditure on an offensive lineman?" Well, all of a sudden, you got guards getting $10 million a year in free agency. Picking a guard in the first round is not crazy anymore.
Feed them that corn fed beef.
Good show, Paul.
You too, John.
We're working on somebody from Utah tomorrow.
Yes,
Paul and
we'll
I'll be
Utah.
Back with you, and then we'll do our Garrett Bowles show. Today was the Ramchick show, so we'll knock out the two offensive linemen. We talked about Cam Robinson last week. So knock out a lot of the offensive line, and then we'll continue to move out. I'm trying to track somebody down from the Hurricanes to get on Friday with me and Feagles. He's a former Hurricane, so I figure who better to talk to somebody from Miami than Jeff, and his son will be going there next year.
Be prepared to hear that they're all great.
The best. The best. It is the U after all.
Yes.
For Paul Dottino, I'm John Schmelz.
See ya.
Thanks for joining us. We'll see you tomorrow on Giants.com. Everybody have a pleasant afternoon.